Welcome to Talking Jimmy Stewart. I'm Tim Vanderberg, and in this episode, I'm joined by my good friend and fellow Jimmy Stewart fan, Michael Hutton. We visit with actor Jim Caviezel. You know Jim from the hit CBS TV series, Person of Interest, and of course, from films such as The Passion of the Christ and The Count of Monte Cristo. But what you may not know is the influence that Jimmy Stewart played on his life. He talked to us about that shortly before receiving the 2015 Harvey Award from the Jimmy Stewart Museum in Indiana, Pennsylvania. Please note, so that Jim could meet as many fans as possible and talk to folks from the media, our time together was short. In fact, you'll hear a little bit of rumbling outside the hotel conference room where we talked, as people gathered to meet with him. Hopefully, it's not too distracting. Enjoy. Jim Caviezel, welcome. We're glad you're here, and we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
So we're big fans of Jimmy Stewart as well, and it was a surprise to hear, you know, that you had a direct tie to him, and we look forward to hearing all the details about that. John Wooden was also a big influence in your life,
yes.
And I'd like to hear the backstory of that. Obviously, your dad, he coached your father, right?
Yes, he coached my father. My dad grew up in the state of Washington, and he was offered a full ride scholarship to UCLA to play basketball. My dad was the player of the year when he was a senior, and UCLA picked him up. And when I was a boy, my dad would, you know, started playing basketball as a kid, and the first thing he taught me was shoes and socks. And that was one of the simple things that John Wooden taught his players, because you put your sock on wrong, you get a crease, you play with a crease in your foot, you have the blister and eventually blood blister, and then it gets infected, and then suddenly one of your starting centers isn't playing in the game off something just very simple. Life's very simple, you know. Yeah, when you button your shirt, you start on the first one, and you got to make it. It's hard to correct it later down the line when it's crooked. So you got to start on the right one. And Wooden had that philosophy that was passed to my father and to me.
So fundamentals, and from that I would think a good teaching opportunity for him, that everything starts step by step.
Well, he had the pyramid of success, John Wooden, and the two cornerstones that never changed when he, I knew him personally, and the two cornerstones were enthusiasm and industriousness. Industriousness being the work ethic, and enthusiasm being God within, and the spirit. With that spirit, you will always have gratitude. You will always have appreciation. No matter how hard things get, you're like, hey, this is going to be a good thing, even though it might not feel so good. And you think about it. You know, you go into practice, and they push you. They certainly did when I was a camper for Coach Wooden. And you'd throw up.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's amazing when you get to a point where you throw up and you're like, good, let's go, game on. Get in the fourth quarter, and your opponent, he's like, this guy just won't give up. And most guys are screaming in pain. You're like, bring it on, you know. And those are great coaches. They get you that level.
Yeah.
And he certainly did.
So the more suffering you endure, you realize how much you can take.
Like, for example, The Passion of the Christ. Who would have thought, you know, some guy is a basketball player. I did not know that that's where I was going to go into acting and stuff. Yes, I impersonated my teammates. I did all that stuff. But I didn't know that that was going to happen. Maybe about 5 years before I became an actor, I thought, man, maybe I should do it. No, I'll go to the Naval Academy or something. So I applied there, and then I didn't get in. I tried again. I didn't get in. I tried again. And then I had a shot, And in 91, I came down to L.A. and a roundabout way. It was a long, long road. But if we fast forward to The Passion of the Christ, if we would have shot that movie in a studio, you would have never seen that performance. It came through incredible amount of suffering. One, my shoulder was dislocated. Two, I had double pneumonia in both right and left lung. I had a virus that was unbelievable, and then I had atrial fibrillation from just the hypothermia that was so cold, and the headaches and the nausea. I couldn't keep anything down. I was so sick. And but, you know, who would have thought that basketball, well, just the simple things of pushing you so far where you wanted to, you know, throw up and quit, and you just kept going. It ended up playing a big part. The industriousness, the work ethic that Wooden talked about, really was a big part of the reason why I didn't quit. I stayed in the moment. And if I look too far out ahead, you know, that we're going to be here for 5.5 months, I would have quit. But I just stayed in the moment, stayed in that quarter, stayed in that play. And one play after another, finally it was completed, and you just look around going, how did this happen? The spirit is that every day, like, I try to find something to be grateful for, something that would the gratitude, appreciation, the life, zest for life. And then many times in my business, I get to be around a lot of wealthy, famous actors that have lost that, you know, that there are certain moral guidelines that we have to follow, mm-hmm. in that work ethic that we do, the mental, the physical, but that spirit element is what keeps us having that zest for life, that staying gratitude, you see. And I'm so lucky that I have the family that are around me, and my friends that have really that share those same principles, or at least are trying to, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the themes, biggest theme of It's a Wonderful Life, is how one life affects so many other lives. And you met Jimmy Stewart at one of these acting functions, or it was for President Bush, was that correct?
President Bush Senior.
Okay, let's back up for a second. Sure. How did that job come about? You were a waiter?
I was waitering at a party for Fox, and this big selection was coming up where they had certain people, and I had, you know, I was trying to make money. I didn't have much at the time, and so I took waitering jobs and different things like that. It was a 20th Century Fox party, and the head waiter said, "Hey, I worked hard." He said, "Hey, do you want to fill in?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And I didn't know who Jerry Weintraub was, mm-hmm. major film movie producer, producer for music, Elvis Presley and whatnot. He did incredible things. And so his mansion was on the Malibu, on the water. They had about a 2-week security, maybe 3 week security check on it, each one of us. We went to the mansion, Weintraub's mansion, but before we even got there, we met at a certain place, and unknown, terms were we to talk to any of these movie stars or celebrities, and they were the best. They were the A-list of that time that were there. And so that was the first time I ever seen that many movie stars or actors and music stars and whatnot. And
starstruck at all?
Oh, yeah. Sure I was. But, you know, I was at that point, I was very nervous because when they when we were passing out, you know, the party prior to that, there were plastic cups. This one was the first time I had to handle crystal. And so I had to hold it with two hands. I couldn't balance it with one. I was 22 years old. There was a huge line to meet the President of the United States. And it was like, you know, five lines of people, not just one single file. It was like five lines, and they're all funneling down. The Mr. and Mrs. Bush were there. And then next to them was the Marine that held the football. And I got to speak a little bit to him of, like, you know, wow, you know, that's like the button that you press if we go to war here, right? And everything. It was amazing. Wow. So just that kind of detail, I never forget that we were in the line, and there's Warren Beatty, there's, you know, Julie Andrews and Janet Jackson, so I'm the lowest on the totem pole as far as being the kid from Mount Vernon, Washington, thinking, how is this even possible that I might even consider doing this? And I think that was really hard, thinking, why, you know, part of me was, you can't do this. And then part of me was like, well, why not? And in the line, all of a sudden Jimmy Stewart walks by, all 6 foot four of them, and I went, oh my gosh, there goes It's a Wonderful Life. And we were told, if you, no uncertain terms, if you talk to him, we will fire you. And I remember thinking, I'll get fired for talking to him. So I thought, well, what can I do? So I was like, hey, Mr. Stewart, you want something to drink? And he goes, oh, yeah, I love her scotch and soda, you know. And I said, all right. So I go get him a drink, come over. And I said, hey, you know, I applied to U.S. Naval Academy. I know. He was amazed that I knew all this stuff about him. Yeah. I started whooping things out, and you were on the you flew the Liberators and everything. Record. Boom, boom, over 20 missions. He's, do you know Walter Matthau was under you, you know? He was baffled that I knew all this about him.
Well, and your youth probably stood out to him, too. Here is a member of the younger generation, and he knows about what I did.
I mean, this was the last, you know, this was 91, so this is, you know, and his wife was still with him, and this is the last part of his life, you know. I believe he died in 98, or 7, yes. July of 97, correct?
That's right.
So we talked for a while, and I was like, well, you know, I wanted to know what it's like to be an actor. And I thought he was the closest thing to me on the fact where, cause I grew up near Whidbey Island Air Station. My dad used to take me to Blue Angels. I often thought about becoming a fighter pilot. I loved the Navy SEALs. I loved that adventure. Hollywood, the reason why I really wanted do the Hollywood is because my friends, that's impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, that you're never going to do that. And that was
a moonshot.
Like, yeah, I'll show you. So that was the end all for me, but I came down and I was getting battered down there, and I'd been down there several months and that while I was doing this, and it was out of desperation, really asking him, like, how do you do this? I mean, how do you get a shot? How, you know, and he, you know, and I turned, no sooner he's talking and whatever, and we're in complete conversation. Mrs. Stewart was right there. And I turn around, and there's the head waiter of the whole thing. I mean, we were told not to speak to any of them.
Right.
And it was also with the Secret Service that was in charge of, you know, there was no messing around. And he put his thumb from his one ear, cutting his neck, to his other ear, and said, you're gone. And I went, oh, he saw it. And I said, I'm sorry. And I turned and I walked up, and he says, young man, you make good movies. And, you know, when you look at the movie, It's a Wonderful Life, you know, the whole idea that if you weren't around, what would have happened? And that story, Jimmy Stewart is a man who had taken the hard road. And he finally gives up. He says, I don't want to even be here. I want to kill myself. And the angel says to him, okay, let me show you what would have been like without you. But how ironic is it that if we really believe that Jesus sits at the right hand of the Father, if we really, and I do with all my heart, and I will share my faith to anybody, it's no... I'm unabashed about that,
yeah,
and absolutely. I love him. And I sat there and I kept thinking, when I was getting offered the Passion, and when people called and said, "Do not do this movie. It's this. It's that." And I said, "You don't know what it is. You've never read this script. I've read this script. You don't know the Gospels. I know the Gospels. Well, tell me about the." And they couldn't tell me anything. I said, "So you don't know whether it is what they say, this negative press on." I said, that's absolutely false. And I remember thinking, after the movie was over and the reaction, I thought, if Jimmy Stewart probably knew ahead of time when Jesus said, "Hey, I need you to pray for this little cat down there, because that kid that came up to you and you went up to him and you said those things, he's going to play me, and we got to pray for him, because it's 97 when he died, and I had 5 more years until I played that." And I'll tell you, I sweated that through that everything, every suffering that ever felt. And I remember when Mel first showed that movie, and I sat there and I just bawled my eyes out. I didn't even know who that guy was. I got to see First, I tried to play Jesus, but that was the wrong portrayal. It was him playing me.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, Jimmy Stewart had a hand. He was like my angel, you know, in some way. And you know, we're, you know, thank you for taking that time for that young man. Thank you for taking that time with that young man, because now I want to show you what this kid's going to do. You know, you never know when a kid comes up to you. And I always think about that myself. If I could ever help, you know, or have a hand in someone else's life or say the right thing, I try to do it. I'm trying to do it right here.
Yeah.
We don't always get it right. But, you know, after I met with Jimmy Stewart at that party, there was a, I'd heard he was really sick. So I, you know, because they have star tours and they drive by these celebrities' homes. So you always knew where Jimmy Stewart's house was. You knew where Lucille Ball's right next to his. And I would drop off at his house and drop him a card, get well. And I had a card for him to, a picture for him to sign, and I've never done that ever since. And the maid told me to come back later, so I came back, and there was Mr. and Mrs. Stewart there. He was by the piano, came in there, and they didn't have the photo. They lost it, but I got something better. I turned to him, and I just said, as I was walking out, I just said, I just want to know, you know, I just love you. And Mrs. Stewart cried. And I turned around and walked out. A few more weeks, I got the Thin Red Line. I went and I wrote him a card. And I said, I made it. I mean, at that point, I looked like it was going to, at that, the best I've ever gotten, any opportunity. But that's how he affected me when I was... The reason why I know that is because in 97, I was filming The Thin Red Line. It didn't come out till 99, but while the first scene that I had with Sean Penn that day. So is it July 3rd, July 7th? July 7th? Somewhere in there.
Is it the 2nd?
It was early July, yeah. First week of July, he died, passed. And I remember I was in the car driving out, and that was the first scene, the movie I had with Sean Penn that's in The Thin Red Line. That was the day that we filmed it, was when he died. So, you know, in some ways, he's been like an angel to me. And you make good movies, when he told me that. Never changed. Wow. It's always been that way. Doesn't mean I don't play the bad guys in movies. It means the story has some form of redemption in it. And then anything that has redemption and has truth in it, those are the things I'm drawn to.
See, you made some back-to-back good movies after the Thin Red Line, I'd say.
I did.
Frequency.
Yes.
The Count of Monte Cristo, which I would say your look in that movie had to have contributed to your casting as Jesus. Because I saw that. And I thought, that's...
Mel saw that. Mel saw that one in the Thin Red Line and said, I'm going to do this movie, and I don't want any Americans, although I may... He told me, he says, oh, maybe this Jim Caviezel guy. I'm not sure.
He knew your name.
Yeah, and then he, but then, you know, I took a meeting with him, you know, and it was just him and his producing partner, Steve McAvity, who did the Braveheart with him and, you know, really his right-hand man in some of the greatest stuff he's ever done. And I met with him, and then Mel shows up. And he's talking about this, that, and I mean, I had this intuition, I guess, that I felt that this wasn't the movie. He was casting this movie called Mavericks. Mm-hmm. And I read the script, and I go, this isn't that good. I mean, it's missing a lot of stuff. It just wasn't there. And I said, you want me to play Jesus, don't you? And he couldn't believe I said that, and I couldn't believe I said it either. And he goes, yeah. I had felt like I knew I was going to die the next day, was the knowing that what this was all about. And then he goes, yeah. And I said, okay. He didn't even send me the script. he called me 2 days later. He called me at home. He goes, "Hey, Jim, it's Mel." I said, Mel who?" He goes, "Hey, Mel Brooks. Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, you still want to play this Jesus guy?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "If you play this Jesus, you may never work in this town again." And I got quiet, and I just said something that was absolutely not for me. I just said, "Look, man, we're all called to carry our cross. If you don't pick up and carry your cross, you will be crushed by the weight of it." And he got quiet on the phone. And then I said, "Oh, my God." He said, "What?" I said, "I just realized my initials are JC and I'm 33 years old." He says, "God, you're freaking me out." And he hung up the phone.
"You're hired, kid."
That's what happened.
That is amazing.
That is absolutely what happened. And, you know, the movie doesn't pull any punches. It really defines. It is the definitive version of love and truth. You know, someone said to me a long time ago, years ago, you know, many of the faiths got it wrong. It was all truth and no love, and that's fire and brimstone. But nowadays, it's all love with no truth, and that's sentimental hogwash. Mm-hmm. There's a balance. You can't have one without the other. There's some point. There has to be obedience under heaven. We have to comply to those rules, and with that, by doing that, we create unity. By being disobedient, we create disunity. Wars ensue, you know, and war in the home, war in the family, division. I mean, it's just it's constant now. You see it everywhere, and this is not our America. When we see Iwo Jima in the war memorial, you see a group of men, United Marines, on a front to lift their flag that God gave us. Now people, they're okay with country, but not with God. How can you have a country without God? How can you have a family without it? The chance for things to go wrong are just multiplying now, and because we've turned our back. And, you know, people say, "Well, you don't tell your thing, religion, on me. You know, don't put your thing on me." I said, "Why? But you do that to me every day. You tell me where I can and can't put my cross or my, even my flag now." You know, people don't want the flag. They're proud to burn it. And then they're upset when a Christian minister puts a cross above the flag. He says, "Well, I'm sorry. I have to put God. Since you're taking the God out of the flag, then why are you so offended when I put my cross above the flag? So you don't mind when they burn the flag. You're only upset now because I put a cross above the flag." You know, I thought that was profound. But our forefathers got it right, and we were very fortunate, and we have to hold true to those. Love the saying that every generation of Americans needs to know that freedom exists not to do what you like, but having the right to do what you ought.
Ryan?
Well, just as we're talking about the Passion of the Christ little bit, you did this part in Aramaic.
Aramaic, Hebrew, and Latin.
Aramaic, Hebrew, and Latin.
Yeah.
Did that illuminate scripture to you?
It was intimidating. When I first did it, I remember thinking, "Oh, they don't know my secret. I'm really dumb."
Well,
I mean, I really didn't think that I look. I mean, look, I got you know, D in algebra and different things, but I came back and got an A. But I mean, yeah. You know, it was I really. Yes, I'll answer your question. Eventually, it illuminated me to a great extent, and I'm so glad. I mean, when Mel brought that to my attention, he went, "Yeah, we're going to do this in Aramaic." "Ah, yeah, right." And he goes, "No, we are." "You're not kidding." "No, I'm not." "And we're going to do it in Hebrew, too. We'll do some Hebrew. And then Greek." "No, Latin." "Yeah, let's do it in Latin." I just sat there and fell back, and I went white. I was like, I don't know if I'm the right guy for this job, you know. But I didn't know I had that facility. you know, of languages. I had no idea, you know. But that's, if I was going to tell young people, I said, don't let people define you. You know, I was defined, you're from a smaller town, you're going to get defined. They don't know your talents. They don't know, they're talents that we all have that are hidden that for years. But we think that it's kind of like the old analogy with a gnat. You know, you can put a gnat in a jar, put the top on it. You can train a gnat. He'll bounce, hit the top of the surface when you cover up the jar with the
right.
lid.
Right.
Take the lid off, and that won't jump out. He'll just jump as that high. It's like an elephant, you know. You tie him up with a big chain when they're little, and they pull and pull and pull and can't do it. Then when they get huge, you can just use a little rope, tie it on his leg. He'll never break off that tree because in his mind he's been trained. So I had to be untrained that I could do this. And that was a great gift in itself, you know.
Well, and time and again in the scriptures, it's the person who is the least who God calls. And it's not about someone who's, obviously a great speaker.
I was on the negative side. So you go least and then zero and then put the negative with the minus.
Can we take a look at your lightning scars?
No, right.
I'm kidding. All right. Well, we wished we'd had a little more time, but there was a big agenda that night. Jim is an amazing guy, and we were really struck by Jim's love for our country. Maybe there's a political career in his future, or given his heroic role on POI, we thought he might fit into the Marvel or DC universe at some point. Who knows? But for now, thanks for listening.